Hiya, wanju, hello, welcome to another episode of The Curb. I'm Andrew F. Pierce, and this is a podcast where I bring you in-depth interviews with filmmakers, creatives, and curators of culture. This podcast is recorded in Boolu, Western Australia, sovereignty never ceded. In December 2013, Australian journalist Peter Gresty, alongside fellow Al Jazeera colleagues Mohamed Fadel Fahmy and Bahir Mohamed, were arrested in Cairo, Egypt, under charges of holding illegal meetings with the Muslim Brotherhood, an organisation declared as a terrorist group by the Egyptian Interior Ministry. Crib Stenders is a prolific Australian filmmaker, with his work spanning features, documentaries and TV series. His latest film, The Correspondent, translates this period of Peter Gresty's life, as documented in his 2017 memoir, The First Casualty, to screen, with Richard Roxburgh portraying the award-winning journalist. The Correspondent is a salient reminder of the need for a global free press, and it arrives at a time where journalists around the world, even Australia, are being vilified, condemned, or at worst, being imprisoned or murdered for their work. While The Correspondent considers the legal battles that Gresty and his journalistic colleagues endured between 2013 through to 2015 when Gresty was released, the film also reflects on another attack on journalists, with Stenders and writer Peter Duncan taking us to another part of Gresty's life, when his work alongside Kate Payton, portrayed here by Yael Stone, in Mogadishu, Somalia in 2011. These scenes act as an insight to the complex ways that reporting from war zones leads to the aggressors violently controlling the passage of information, with The Correspondent then amplifying their message of advocating for a free press. A central aspect to that advocacy is Richard Roxburgh's turn as Peter Gresty. Arguably, this is the finest performance of Richard Roxburgh's career, with the weight of expectation, trauma, uncertainty and grief lingering on his mind, often only appearing through glances or brief looks at his fellow inmates. Roxburgh echoes the work of Tom Hanks in Captain Phillips, another film which sees the acclaimed actor give a career-best turn. And in doing so, he brings to life Gresty in an empathetic and supportive manner. It is as if this is the only performance that matters in his career. It's powerful stuff. I carry that in mind when I sit down to discuss the film with Crib Stenders. Oddly, this is the first time in my career that I've actually had an interview with Crib, and I've admired his work for a long time. Having first caught The Illustrated Family Doctor in a small screen at Lunar Cinemas Leaderville, to being knocked on my feet with Boxing Day and Lucky Country, and then following his filmmaking career, which went onto a new level with Red Dog and Red Dog True Blue. And with the back of this run of films, he's examined the role of Australian stories and voices and the impact that they have on our cultural identity. Few filmmakers in Australian cinema get more than one or two films, yet Stenders has crafted an enduring filmography that comments on and furthers our understanding of what Australian culture, identity, and ultimately cinema can be. While this is my first time talking with Crib, I certainly know it won't be my last. The Correspondent arrives in Australian cinemas on 17th of April 2025, with Q&A screenings continuing to take place at select cinemas. Make sure to check your local cinema guide for session details. And while you're on the internet, which you're probably doing right now, why don't you head on over to thecurb.com.au, where you can check out other work that we do. We have interviews, reviews, articles, long pieces about a whole bunch of different things. I recently had a great chat with local independent filmmaker Michael Facey about the upcoming federal election. I highly recommend you heading over and giving that a read. We are also completely independent and ad-free website, and we live on the support of listeners and readers just like yourself. For exclusive unedited versions of select interviews and a lot more, visit patreon.com/thecurb.au, where you can support our work from as little as $1 a month. Right, here is a trailer for The Correspondent, followed my chat with director Crib Stenders.
Kent?
Hi.
Tell them we have to stay together.
Peter Gresty.
Charged with aiding a terrorist group.
You know what's going on here.
We're pawns in a political game.
Push a goal.
There must be some confusion.
I'm just a journalist.
My lawyers told my family that you can be bought cheaply because you have no moral allegiances.
I need to know what you said in your statement.
They know where I live. They know I have a child. Just wanted to go home.
Hello, sir.
This whole world's bloody insane.
Dad, you're not helping.
Al Jazeera is a terrorist organization, and these are their agents.
Rami Muhammad and Peter Griffith.
Killed
Daher Muhammad.
7 years.
The only way through this is to make a case to the world.
Now is the time for pressure.
I'm nervous as I write this. I've been caught in the middle of a multi-headed political struggle. So our arrest here is not a mistake.
Your letter was very good. There'll be repercussions.
Your voice is becoming an echo chamber in the West.
I can no longer pretend it'll go away by keeping quiet.
We will never give up.
As a journalist, this is my battle.
I'm always excited whenever I get to see that a Crew of Standards film is coming up, because I know that there's going to be some kind of reflection on Australia through your work, whether it be documentaries, the TV work, or films like with The Correspondent. And as kind of a launching pad for our conversation, I'd love to find out where your interest in telling stories about Australia from within Australia came from.
Well, gosh, I live in Australia. I never went to LA. I don't think I ever will. I don't think I'll become, an international filmmaker in that respect. I love the big passion and love for Australian cinema, and I'm an Australian filmmaker. So by default, I tell Australian stories. That's really how my life and my career has evolved. And I'm finally kind of happy with that. You know what I mean? It's sort of like a space that I feel very comfortable in and feel very excited about.
Mm. I mean, one of the things which you do so well is being able to dig up stories that are kind of underrepresented or under-discussed or explored, like Red Dog, like Danger Close, like you've done with The Correspondent. How do you find the right story for you to tell, the right Crib Stender story?
Well, I started kind of being a writer-director. You know, I sort of created my own stories. But, I've tended to just to, in order to kind of maintain, you know, that's a very, very singular, very solitary and very difficult existence to have in Australia. So I sort of started with Red Dog. It sort of started this process of having stories, not so much me going to the stories, but the stories coming to me. And even though I'm developing, I'm still writing, trying to develop my own projects, which I will eventually hopefully one day do. Right now I'm very kind of, I'm sort of a bit of a kind of a radar dish that's open to any kind of signal that's beamed at it. And if the signal kind of makes sense, and both creatively and also a lot of it, 90% of, or 80% of sometimes the reason why I pick a story is that I know that this can get made. I know that it can get financed. I know that there's a market for it, and I know that there's distribution and attached to it. So there are a lot of decisions that go into finally deciding to do a story beyond just the story itself. So, you know, that's what the films I've done have been very much a combination of those, sort of the fact that I could creatively, I think I know how to do this. I know how to pull this off, along with all the machinery that goes with it.
Yeah. I remember you talking about The Correspondent, particularly that stories about the freedom of the press, and additionally, by virtue as well, freedom of the arts, are really difficult to get made. How was your journey in getting The Correspondent made and meeting Peter and reading his book and going, yeah, this is the right thing? I imagine it might have been difficult.
Well, it was. I mean, the thing is, I've got to give my producer, Carmel Travers, a lot of credit here, you know. And with all these films I've done, you know, it's always been the producer who's really, you know, put their money where their mouth is and put their passion forward, you know, the documentaries as well. It's not just me, it's my producers. They really are the ones that sort of drive it, because ultimately the buck literally does stop with them. And Carmel was very, you know, driven and, you know, she was like a dog with a bone. She was very, very persistent. We developed the film over about 4 years. And I never, you know, like I'm developing the film along with four other things. And you go into these things going, well, if they happen, great. If they don't, well, you know, it's the way it is. And I, for a long time, I thought, oh, it'll be one of these projects that'll just end up being a folder on my desktop. But, you know, you never can tell, you know, and Carmel just kept on pushing the project forward. We slowly gained momentum. She was a journalist herself, so she had this kind of imperative to make the film. And that's why you never can predict the future. You never know what happens. And the zeitgeist has shifted. We were able to get the right kind of budget. Carmel was able to get the right bit of private equity involved. We got Richard on board. It was just good timing with Screen Australia. And it sort of suddenly it happened. You know, that's the kind of the way these things kind of evolve. If I could predict it, it's like predicting the weather. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
And if I could predict the weather, I certainly wouldn't be making films.
Well, I mean, certainly, yeah, we'd be able to certainly know a heck of a lot more. I want to take you back as well to the opening night at Adelaide Film Festival. Now, I wasn't in the main room. I was in a different cinema, the one where the light didn't shine on you. And so you had to kind of pivot and adjust with the light shining in your face, which was one of the best moments I've had in the cinema. Can you flash back to that opening night? What was that like?
Oh, that was, you know, it was thrilling. It's always really nerve-wracking when, because up until that point, we hadn't showed the film to an audience bigger than 4 or 6 people in a screening room in the edit suites or in the post-production house. So it was the first time the film had literally, it was still, you know, even though it's not shot on film, it's digital, it was still wet, you know, it still hadn't dried. It had sort of just been finished. And it's always that nerve-wracking moment where, you know, you kind of get lost in your own bubble. You don't know really what you've got. You can't really judge the film until you really see it with a sort of like a public audience. So it was a mixture of, you know, excitement, but also nervousness, because I've been in screenings before where, you know, it's hasn't gone down well. You know, there's been a deadness, but there was an electricity in the air that night. And I also felt it was just for me personally and for Peter Grester, you know, it was kind of, again, a little miracle that we'd got this film made. And here it was after all these years now being seen by a big audience.
Yeah. The thing that really stuck with me as well is getting to see Peter alongside Richard. And I personally feel that this is Richard's best performance. You know, he's had a career of great performances, but there's something about his performance and his turn as Peter here that it feels vital. Like it feels like everything is hinging on this one performance. Can you talk about how they worked together to ensure there was a fidelity there?
Yeah, well, Richard and I, when we first met to talk about the project, you know, I assured Richard that we weren't going to do like a normal biopic. We weren't going to do like a complete unknown where it was, you're going to kind of really try and sort of channel Peter's voice and do an impersonation. You know, this was going to be an interpretation. This was going to be a painting rather than a photograph. And what I said is, I want you to kind of maybe assume Peter's spirituality as opposed to his physicality. And Richard really got that, you know, and that was always my idea, no matter who was going to play the character, whether it was another actor or whatever, it was always going to be a kind of an interpretation of Peter Grester. But Richard is such a beautiful actor. He's so empathetic. He's so generous. He's so effortlessly gifted. He's very intuitive and he's very gentle. And he just also has all the qualities that Peter Grester has, you know. Mm. And it was just one of those great kind of, you know, casting decisions, because I think 99% of casting is directing. That, you know, once you've cast the role right, you really, as a director, you just stand out of the way. You just put the camera where it needs to be and not try and confuse them or upset them or make them feel insecure. You're just there to support them. So Richard really channeled into that, and once he knew it was an interpretation, he could bring all these instinctive elements to the character.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of it is in his eyes as well. There are moments, particularly as we get near the end, where there is so much weighing on his mind, and you can see that through his eyes. I'm curious for you, watching through the camera, sitting there on set during the day, was there a particular day that you felt transported or that kind of sticks out as like, this is something great happening here?
Well, I'll tell you a funny story. We shot the film kind of pretty much chronologically, as much mm-hmm. as we could, because we had the haircut and things like that. And it's one of the first times I've been able to shoot a film in that way, because usually the logistics never allow it to happen, whether it's cast availability or locations and stuff. And we kind of shot the last few scenes on the last day. And I don't know if you remember, there's a scene right at the very end of the film where Richard kind of breaks down, you know, after he's released. And Richard and I, by that point, were so tired. I couldn't really see straight. I couldn't even focus on the monitor. And that particular afternoon, I was just sort of in this fog of just exhaustion. And so was Richard. And we did that take, you know, where he gets really emotive. And I'm kind of going, oh, God, is that, that's a bit much, isn't it? It's a bit over the top. And I said to Richard, oh, maybe we should try and, at the end of the day, I kind of went, yeah, I think he was going, well, how was that? Was that all right? I said, yeah, it was good. It was interesting, but I don't know. Maybe it was a bit too much. Yeah, maybe you're right. And then we went back the next day and reshot it where he didn't do that. I felt like we kind of maybe, you know, we gilded the lily too much. And then weeks later in the edit, I'm going, oh, to my editor, I'm saying, make sure we use the second day performance. And she said, are you fucking mad? One of the most amazing performances I've ever seen. Are you out of your mind? And I realized, once the fog had lifted, I realized, oh my God, Richard had just given me an absolutely gold bit of performance. And I suddenly went, oh my God, you're right. So
yeah,
it's not an exact science, this directing thing, I can tell you that.
Well, I mean, when I watch it, because I've seen the film twice, and both of the times I'm reminded of Tom Hanks and Captain Phillips in the moment in that film where he breaks down. And it's this emotional relief of freedom, but then the weight of knowing that you're carrying a trauma going forward. I was listening to an interview that Richard did recently talking about the reality that Peter has to live with nowadays, where when he's traveling, he has to mark himself down as engaged with terrorist activities and things like that. And that's a horrifying reality to live with. And you bring that to life on screen and force us to sit with it and know what the impact of people fighting for press freedom is and the impact that journalists are going across. When you're releasing a film like this into the current world, the impact of things going on in Gaza, in the Ukraine, all around the world against the press, what does it make you feel like engaging in that kind of advocacy and support for press freedom?
Well, yeah, it's interesting. Peter Grest has answered this question a couple of times in the Q&As, and that, you know, when he first optioned the book to Carmel in 2017, he said to her, listen, you're going to have to kind of work very quickly, because this, I think this might date very quickly, because he wrote it on the back of September 11, you know, when journalism was under threat then, under, you know, various governments sort of suppression of, you know, I guess, ideologies and, you know, following some kind of government line. And he couldn't be more wrong. I mean, this is the thing, like, you know, you make a film and you can't predict the timing of it, but it really feels like it's very much the zeitgeist now, is that, you know, we've made a film at a time when press freedom and freedom of speech is at its most critical crunch point, especially in the US, you know, where you've got Associated Press banned from the White House. I mean, if there's anything more scary and draconian or Orwellian than that, I don't know what that is, because we are in it right now. And so the film, I'm very conscious of the fact that the film is coming out at this time, and the fact that we're having this conversation, we can have this conversation, the Q&As we've had have been extraordinary. All the audiences have been so intelligently engaged with the subject. You realize this is a big concern, because this is what our democracies, our civilizations are built on the foundation of objective journalism. That's what I've grown up with. that's the way I've been able to build a sort of a worldview, and not just reading one source, reading a number of sources. And that's what keeps us healthy and keeps us active and alive. And I think it's just important. If the film does one thing, if it does one thing, if it just reminds us of the importance of journalism, then it's done its job.
Yeah, that's beautiful. I want to shift to talking about supporting actors now for a moment, and specifically talking about Rahel, who is just phenomenal. And then we'll also talk about Yale as well. But I've seen Rahel kind of just grow throughout films. What was it like working with him on set?
Well, I first worked with Rahel, I think, on his first gig 10 years ago on The Principal. We sort of found him. Anousheh Zarakesh, my casting director, found him, and I went, "This guy is incredible." And he was astounding. He was like a young Al Pacino. He was like ferociously talented. And the minute I got the script and I was looking at the character of Beher, I knew exactly it was going to be Rahel. And I'm so glad he said yes. And he's just done an amazing job of pulling that character off, and he's such a beautiful actor and so generous. And what was great about that community of actors is that, Sydney has a very, very deep and wide Middle Eastern diaspora. And when we started casting the film, we were told, "Oh, you're going to have to go to London to cast this film. You're not going to find the talent here. There's the, it's how dare you even think of that you can make a film set in Egypt in Sydney." And we couldn't have been farther from the truth. We had such a wide, beautiful, deep reservoir of talent to choose from. I was actually robbed for choice. I was three deep sometimes with a character, so I could cherry pick the best actor for the role. And what you've got as well with this community is that you've got people with really diverse backgrounds, really interesting human beings who've really lived through a lot of trauma, and who are very, very talented, and they bring all of that to the character and to the role. So they're not just playing stereotypes, they're actually playing real human beings with a lot of range and depth. So that was a wonderful, wonderful outcome of making the film and of casting it. Does that answer your question? Sorry.
It does, yeah, it really does.
Yeah.
But then swapping over to talking about Yale as well, like I've really admired the work that she's done, having returned to Australia and made it kind of a thing to really work in Australia and tell Australian stories. I know she was very vocal about not wanting to go back to America and tell American stories. So with that in mind, what was it like working with Yale and creating her character as well?
It was great. It was again like with Richard. It was sort of effortless. She came on. She knew the role, what it was. She understood its purpose and its place, and that it was a small role, but in a way, the biggest role in the film. And when you see the film, you'll understand why. And she understood that, and I was really grateful that she kind of came on board knowing that. And yeah, she's just, again, like Richard, just a very, very decent person, just a really lovely person to work with. Understands her craft, understands her instrument, which is herself, understands her bandwidth, and can access sort of an emotional place in a really profoundly beautiful way. I mean, I want every time I watch the film, without giving too much away, what she goes through and how she kind of physicalizes the traumatic event that happens to her is it's kind of breathtaking, really. And it kind of almost pretty much brings me to tears every time I see it, because she's just so genuine and in the moment. So yeah, I can't sing enough praises for her. She's the real deal.
I mean, this and Blaze, like she's giving two really, really powerful supporting roles there. I'm excited to see her career continue here in Australia. As a last kind of question, scooting away from The Correspondent for a moment, but keeping it in mind, because it's going out into cinemas, I'd love to talk about the accessibility of Australian films for a moment, because I know that you've really done a great job of making sure that people have access to some of your earlier films. Motherland, you've made available on Vimeo, which is fantastic to be able to access your filmography. But how important is it for you as an Australian filmmaker that people have access to Australian films in general, whether it be in a cinema or on streaming services?
Look, I think it's incredibly important. You know, I think it's vital, and I think, you know, what I've realized is as I get older, it's a constant battle. You know, it's a constant struggle, but it's also, it should be a struggle. It should be a battle. We should always be working hard. You know, we can't get complacent, because it's very easy for things to slide. And the film industry is always in crisis. It's always going to be in crisis. It's always going to be hard. It's always going to be challenging. But as long as we have the I guess, the passion, the will, and the desire. And what's great, what I think, Andrew, what I think is really, really wonderful about my experience with The Correspondent over the last few weeks and the last few months is that Australian audiences also want Australian films. They want Australian stories. And you know what? We actually have an incredible, beautiful, rich, vibrant Australian film cultural legacy that made me the filmmaker I am, and that we genuinely can be proud of. I think the whole cultural cringe has, I think, finally gone away over the last 10, 15 years. That's gone now. And I think we can just get on with actually really embracing who we are as a culture and where we sit in the world, and that we've got incredible talent here. Like, I get so excited every time I see a new film by a new filmmaker, an Australian filmmaker. I saw Bird Eater last year, and it just really galvanized me again, going, yeah, this is what it's about. It's about new voices coming through, pushing the medium, pushing this, what an Australian film can be, what it can do. And yeah, I think it's very important that we work in whatever way we can to keep our film culture alive, whether that's posting our own stuff, whether it's, you know, making sure the streamers stream and we have content quotas, you know, supporting our local repertory cinemas, you know, getting even just simply, you know, that's what I love about Letterboxd, you know, just saying these films exist, seek them out, find them. And that's part of the fun, is the archaeology, is the hunt for a film. You know, they are out there. You can find them. They can be on a physical media somewhere on someone's shelf. You know, you can borrow it. You can get a copy of it. You can do it illegally. It doesn't really matter, as long as it's, you know, eventually everything kind of, I think, the trickle down is what's important. And the trickle down is the fact that, you know, we make these films, they live and breathe, and they can continue to survive in some shape or form.
That's a perfect answer. Thank you, Krim. I love giving you a little bit of a soapbox at the end.
No, I got a little bit carried away there, but you know, you got me on something I feel very, very deeply passionate about. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, again, your filmography, it's been a delight to be able to see you work through Australian history and then tell original Australian stories as well, all the way back from, I remember seeing Boxing Day in Lunar Cinemas, and then just kind of tracking it and going from there. So it's a delight to finally be able to talk with you. I know this won't be the last time, but thank you. Thanks, again, Andrew. For the film, for your career, and for your work. Hats off to
Thanks.
You.
Thanks so much.
You're welcome.
No, I appreciate Take it. Care. Take Anytime. Care. Bye.
Hey, thanks again for listening to this interview with Krib Stenders. The Correspondent is in Australian cinemas from 17th of April, 2025. And for other interviews and reviews, visit thecurb.com.au. I'll see you on the next one.